So good afternoon, everyone. Today I'm presenting my recent work, our recent work, the SO5 deconfined phase transition under the fuzzy sphere microscope. And this work is done together with my collaborators Liang Donghu, Wei Zhu, and my supervisor Yinchen He. And this talk will be mainly based on this archive paper. So, as a short introduction, quantum phase transitions have been a central topic of modern condensed matter physics. It describes the discontinuity in the ground state of a when tuning a parameter in the Hamiltonian. For the easiest example would be the transverse field Ising model. When the Ising term is dominant, there will be a symmetry breaking into a ferromagnetic phase. And when the transverse field is dominant, all the spins will be polarized. One reason why quantum phase transitions are interesting is because of the emergent symmetry. For example, we still consider a transverse field Ising model on square lattice. In the microscopic model in the ultraviolet, the space-time symmetry group is very small, which only consists of a discrete space rotation, discrete space translation, discrete space rotation, and a time translation. However, if we go to the low energy or long wavelength limit, there will be a much larger emergent symmetry group called the conformal group, which is generated by translation, Lorentz symmetry, dilatation, that is the scale transformation, and also something called the special conformal transformation. And this large symmetry group cast very strong constraint on the theory. For example, the form of correlation functions are the two-point correlation functions and the three-point correlation functions, they are uniquely determined to be a power law, and the powers are given by the scaling dimensions of the conformal field theory. So the theory is uniquely determined by a discrete set of information, which is the scaling dimensions and the coefficient F, which is called the OPE coefficients. And these scaling dimensions also gives all the critical behavior, such as the critical exponents. Now, most quantum phase transitions take place between a trivial phase, which preserves all the symmetry, and a symmetry broken phase, where some of the symmetry is broken. This paradigm is called the Landau paradigm. Efforts has also been made to explore quantum phase transitions beyond the Landau level. A pioneering example is the deconfined quantum critical point, which is a phase transition takes place between a nil phase, which breaks the SO3 spin rotation symmetry, and a VBS phase, which breaks the space rotation and translation symmetry. And this is a transition directly between two ordered phases instead of between a trivial phase and an ordered phase. That means it's beyond the Landau paradigm. So this transition has been studied using quantum Monte Carlo. People have found that this transition looks continuous. That is, there is no obvious sign of first order transition, but the scaling behavior, it looks very abnormal. For example, the critical exponents, they drift with the system size. And more strangely, the obtained scaling dimensions, they violate the rigorous bound set by the numerical bootstrap. So theoretical efforts has been made to explain and describe such phase transition. People find that this deconfined critical point has a very large global symmetry, an emergent SO5 symmetry. And this transition is controlled by a SO5 tensor, which breaks the symmetry into SO3 times O2. And when the SO3 is favored, the system flows into a new order. And when the U1 or O2 is favored, there is another operator called a dangerous irrelevant operator, which drives the system into a VBS order. And a very interesting proposal to explain the abnormal scaling behavior is called the pseudo-criticality. So to explain this idea, we need to generalize the global symmetry from SO5, which is loosely equivalent to SP2, to an SPN symmetry. So we consider its phase diagram controlled by a parameter G, which corresponds to the stiffness of the nonlinear sigmoid model. And this flow is perpendicular to the upper diagram. And when the N is very large, the large N expansion results tells us that there is a symmetry broken fixed point and an attractive CFT fixed point, which corresponds to a CFT phase, and another repulsive CFT fixed point, which corresponds to the transition between them. And when we slowly decrease N, we find these two CFT fixed points. They get closer and closer, and at some critical N, they merge into one CFT fixed point. And when we further decrease the N, this CFT fixed point will split into the complex plane and become two fixed points described by complex CFTs. And on the real axis, in vicinity of these two complex fixed points, the flow is very small, and we can still the flow is very slow, and we can still observe critical behavior at small system size, which is called the pseudo-critical behavior. So to study a critical theory, the existing methods include studying lattice models using quantum Monte Carlo and conformal bootstrap. They each has their own disadvantages. For lattice models, you need to construct a microscopic model where the CFT can emerge from it. And there is no guarantee of such emergibility. And the critical exponents or the scaling dimensions in the CFT is obtained through very complicated finite size scaling behavior. And for conformal bootstrap, it is mainly based on inequalities constraining the conformal field theory, and there's no guarantee of closed kinks and closed islands or kinks that can give you that can tell you the scaling dimensions. And both methods has only limited access to the lowest lying information of the critical theory. So last year, there has been a new method studying critical theories called the fuzzy sphere, which involves studying electrons moving on a sphere with a magnetic monopole at the center. It is a very powerful method. It can obtain a very wide range of spectrum. For example, in the Ising CFT, this method can find operators that is beyond the capability of conformal bootstrap. And it has been the first numerical verification of the conformal symmetry in the 3D Ising transition. And it can achieve very high accuracy even on very small system size. For example, in the system with only 16 spins, the results are very close to the bootstrap result, and such calculation can be done only on a table computer. So to explain the idea of fuzzy sphere, yes?
Can you explain what things are not accessible using conformal bootstrap? I think I don't understand.
Okay, so the conformal bootstrap, they mainly use the unitarity condition and the crossing symmetry of four-point function. to cast a constraint on the scaling dimensions and the OPE coefficients. So it can obtain some inequality with respect to the, for example, the scaling dimension of the lowest operators in the CFT. And such constraint can sometimes be very powerful. That means that it can constrain the system, the possible range of scaling dimensions to a very small island.
Okay, so what is the cases in which it doesn't work?
So for example, the input of the bootstrap is only the global symmetry. So if you have many CFTs with the same global symmetry, for example, the gauge theories, the conformal bootstrap cannot tell them apart.
Thank you.
Okay. So to explain the basic idea of fuzzy sphere, we look at the two keywords of it. First, about the sphere, it means that we want to look at a quantum Hamiltonian defined on this sphere. If we count also the time direction of the path integral configuration, it is on a cylinder with SD times R. And there exists a conformal transformation called the Weyl transformation to transform configurations on this geometry to a flat space time. And each time slice, which is a sphere, is mapped onto a sphere centered at the origin point. So the time slices now become the concentric spheres. And for a flat space time, the CFTs are very well studied. And one can make use of a very beautiful property called the state operator correspondence, which means that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the CFT operators and the eigenstates of the quantum Hamiltonian. And they have corresponding angular momenta and quantum numbers. And more beautifully, the Hamiltonian on the cylinder geometry, which sends one time slice to another time slice, under Weyl transformation, it transforms to the scaling operator or the dilatation operator, which means that the energy of the eigenstates of quantum Hamiltonian, they are linear to the scaling dimension of the corresponding operator. That is to say, to obtain the scaling dimension of the CFT, we only need to diagonalize the quantum Hamiltonian, describing it on a sphere, and read the excitation energies. So to put a quantum Hamiltonian on a sphere in 1 plus 1D, it is very easy. One just need to consider a 1D lattice chain with periodic boundary condition. It easily realizes the S1 geometry, that is a circle. But things are more complicated for 2 plus 1D. There is no lattice that preserves the full SO3 rotation symmetry. And the best we can do is the icosahedral group. So to put a quantum Hamiltonian on a 2 plus 1D D sphere, we need to consider other solutions. Our solution is to fuzzify the sphere instead of putting it on a lattice. That is, we consider spherical lambda levels instead of lattice as single particle states. We consider electrons moving on a two sphere and put a 4 pi s magnetic monopole at the center. In this way, it modifies the free Hamiltonian, and the single particle eigenstate are the spherical lambda levels, which is described by the so-called monopole monopole spherical harmonics. It is different from the regular spherical harmonics in a sense that for the lowest energy, the lowest nanolevel, the n index runs from minus s to s. That is, the lowest nanolevel is 2s plus 1 fold degenerate. And the second nanolevel is 2s plus 3 fold degenerate, etc., etc. So if we set the single particle gap to be the dominant energy scale, and set the lowest nanolevel to be partially filled, or to be more specific, half filled, we can constrain the quantum fluctuation to the lowest nanolevel, and then that means that we can project out the higher nanolevels and consider only the lowest nanolevel. So the real space fermions can be constructed by using the creation and annihilation operators on the lowest nanolevel. Here, that is the CM, where n goes from the minus s to s. And if we consider an interaction Hamiltonian, for example, the four fermion term, we can also write it in terms of the annihilation and creation operators on the lowest Landau level, which is somehow analogous to a spin chain with length 2s plus 1. So these 2s plus 1 orbitals, they form a representation of the SO3 rotation symmetry, which means that the rotation symmetry is preserved completely in the microscopic model. So our target is to construct the SO5 nonlinear cinema model, which describes the D2CP on a fuzzy sphere. So we consider four flavors on each orbital. That is, apart from the orbital index that runs from minus s to s, we also consider a flavor index that runs from 1 to 4. In this way, the maximal flavor symmetry is a U4 group. And we want to construct an interaction Hamiltonian that breaks the U4 symmetry to an SP2 symmetry. To do this, we construct the Hamiltonian using fermion bilinears. For example, the density operator, C dagger C, which preserves the SU4 symmetry, and a pairing operator, C omega C, where this omega corresponds to a symplectic 2 form. And this pairing interaction term, delta dagger delta, it breaks the U4 flavor symmetry to an SP2 symmetry. And this is our final model, and we do an exact diagonalization study on this model up to the number of orbitals equals 10. So the first question we want to ask is the phase diagram of this model. So we study the phase diagram by considering the order parameter, which is a fermion bilinear term in the vector representation of the SO5. So we measure the expectation value of n squared. So in a CFT phase, due to the unitarity bound, if we consider the measured value as a function of the system size, the number of the number of orbitals, it should decay faster than a power 1/2. So numerically, we found that for small v over u, for v over u less or equal to 0.4, this m squared actually decays slower than the power 1/2, which means it cannot be described by a CFT and must be a symmetry broken region. and for v over u, u larger than 0.5, we find the result consistent with the unitarity bound. And we want to further look at this region and see if it has a homosymmetry. So we do this by inspecting the state operator correspondence. That is the excitation energy of the energy levels should be proportional to the scaling dimension of the corresponding bonding operator if there is a conformal symmetry. And this arbitrary constant can be determined by calibrating the conserved symmetry current, which we know has an exact scaling dimension of 2. So we can look at the energy spectrum, and the criteria for the conformal symmetry is that the spectrum should have a conserved, should have the conserved currents, that is the symmetry current with a scaling dimension exactly 2, and a stress tensor with scaling dimension exactly 3. And we indeed find such stress tensor operator. And we can consider the conformal multiplet, which consists the primary operators and its descendants by acting spatial derivative to it. And these operators should have scaling dimensions with integer spacing. That is, for example, partial phi should have a scaling dimension exactly delta phi plus 1. And indeed, we can find such operators with integer spacings. For example, here we can list out all the expected operators, and indeed we find operators have agreeing scaling dimension, which is a strong indication of the conformal symmetry. So we know that at this range, the system has emergent conformal symmetry. Our next question is, which conformal field theory is it? If we still look at the three possible three, this can be determined by the lowest symmetry singlet. If we look at the three possible scenarios, this CFT, this fixed point B, it is repulsive, so it cannot exist in a vast parameter region. And for this CFTC, it has no relevant singlet. That is, the lowest singlet must have a scaling dimension larger than 3. On the contrary, for the pseudo-critical case, the CFT flow is first attractive, and then repulsive. That means the scaling dimension of the lowest singlet, it should flow from irrelevant, that is larger than 3, and it decreases along the CFT along the RG flow to a value that is relevant, that is smaller than 3, and we indeed find this trend, that is along the RG flow, that is as we increase the system size, we find the scaling dimension of the lowest singlet flowing from irrelevant to relevant. This is a strong evidence for the scenario of pseudo-criticality in the shade of complex CFTs. So we can have a look at the full operator spectrum. Using this method, the state operator correspondence, we obtained the lowest 23 primaries and their 76 descendants. There is, for example, the lowest parity alt SO5 vector, which corresponds to the order parameter of the phase transition. The lowest parity even symmetric tensor, which corresponds to the relevant operator that controls this phase transition. The lowest spin one anti-symmetric tensor, which corresponds to the corresponds to the symmetry current, and there is a parity odd operator in the representation 30. It corresponds to the so-called dangerous irrelevant operator in the honeycomb lattice. We actually find this operator quite relevant, which implies that the deconfined phase transition cannot be described a direct transition between the VBS and the NEO on a honeycomb lattice. And we have the lowest singlet. Its relevance indicates that the D2CP must be pseudocritical, and the stress tensor which is conserved. There is also a parity odd operator in the representation 55, which is the dangerous irrelevant operator in the on the square lattice. Our calculation indeed verify its irrelevance. So we actually find that these scaling dimensions, they all drift with the parameter V over U, which is a consequence of the pseudo criticality. And we can compare the critical exponents of different lattice models calculated by Monte Carlo, and indeed we find these values correspond to different V over U values. So besides the spectrum, we can also look at the observables on the phase sphere. The simplest ones are the density operators, that is a fermion bilinear. We can calculate the two point functions on the ground state. Well, we find the result agree well with the expectation of conformal of the 2-point function constrained by conformal symmetry. And also the 1-point function can give us the OPE coefficients of the SO5 and CFT. So in conclusion, we apply the fuzzy sphere regularization to study the D2CP with SO5 symmetry. We find evidence for the approximate conformal symmetry through exact diagonalization. This evidence includes conserved symmetry current, stress tensor, and integer space levels between primaries and descendants. We find evidence that D2CP is more likely pseudocritical. We find the lowest symmetry singlet flowing from irrelevant to relevant. And through the phase sphere regularization, we can obtain a wealth of information from the operator spectrum. We find 23 conformal primaries and their 76 descendants. And there are important implications. For example, the SO5 D2CP cannot describe a direct honeycomb lattice NEO to VBS transition. And there are several open questions, including if we say that this pseudo-critical region is in the shade of the complex Fitts point, can we indeed spot the Fitts point on the complex plane? And we know that the SPM model, they are conformal for large N and pseudo-critical for small n. Can we find the conformal window of this model? And the RGFlow can be further further verified by some RG monotonic quantities such as f function. So that is all of my talk. Thank you for listening.
Monte Carlo methods like another problem with climate spoilers when you're doing the extrapolation, right?
Yes.
And that this method does not suffer from this.
Yes, we actually do not need finite scaling.
Right.
So the scaling dimensions can be directly read out from the energy spectrum.
I see. Do you have an idea why, like, if this method is so powerful that you can do this on small, like, on diagonalization small?
The trick is it is defined on a sphere geometry.
I see.
So you see the quantum Hamiltonians on a sphere is actually equivalent to CFTs on flat space time.
This is the advantage of the scaling method.
Yes.
To map a huge system into a small system. Is that right?
I'm saying that by describing the spherical quantum Hamiltonian by a flat space-time CFT, and the flat space CFT is actually very much well studied. Then, for example, for the lattice models, we always study the geometry of a torus, and actually the CFTs on a torus is a very tricky problem. But here we have the CFT on a flat space time.
Yes. Do you also know why the gap has a direct relationship with the scaling exponents?
Yes. This is because through the Weyl transformation, which maps the cylinder to a flat space time, the Hamiltonian, which sends one times it is directly mapped to the scaling operator, which sends a smaller circle to a larger circle. So the eigenvalues of the H is the energy, and the eigenvalue of this D is the scaling dimension. They are of one-to-one correspondence.
It does not depend on the size, it's still constant.
No, it doesn't depend on the size.
Thank you.
So if we consider only the real axis, we find that there is no fixed point except for the symmetry broken. But the RG flow in the shade of the two complex fixed points, this flow is very slow. Very slow, meaning that for small system size, because the flow here is very small, it will just start here. It will just start at this pseudo-critical region. And only for large enough system size, you can see that it flows to the symmetry broken fixed point. So the system here, they are of very, very long correlation length. Most often, correlation length that is beyond our calculation capacity. For example, like 1,000 or tens of thousands. So there is actually no fixed point here, but smaller numerical results on finite system size will look as if there is a fixed point here. Yes?
You run into a situation where you needed to do diagonalization. learning something as long as it's more than 20 or 40. Is that something typical, or you really need to do it, like, mostly do it for 10 or something? Just like that, that's just hard.
Actually, we are also, for larger system size, for example, the number of orbits of 20 or 40, this model can also be studied with other methods, other numerical methods, for example, the DMRG or quantum
control. And do you see, like, perspective, like, see the progress of maybe using other methods beyond the exact adaptation
Yes. So we can use other methods to expand the possible system size.
More questions? Thank you.